Wednesday night edition of the Anaheim Calling podcast. The Ducks taking on the Dallas Stars at Honda Center in a game like almost every game that the Ducks have played lately that was of pretty big importance in the standings. The Ducks obviously taking this one 2-0. Our on-site correspondent, Jake Rudolph, is joining us. Jake, how was it from the comfort of your cushy season ticket seats?
Oh, it was a really good win. It was a... The building was into it.
It was a gritty win.
It was a very typical Anaheim Ducks gritty win with this current kind of core. But yeah, it was fun. And right now, I'm just trying to survive the frozen tundra that is Long Beach.
It has been very cold.
Yeah,
in like the state of California for some reason.
It's below 50 degrees.
Yeah,
below 50 degrees.
When I left the Bay Area Tuesday morning, like I had to get up at like 5 a.m. to go to the airport, and it was 33 degrees outside. And then I get here thinking, all right, I'm going back to the sun, and it's like 40 degrees. So I don't know what gives right now. I'm sure people are tuning in to listen to us talk about the weather, by the way.
And especially complain about the weather being only 40 degrees and being freezing.
I know. I'm sure the East Coast listeners are just seething right now.
Yep. But it's all cold. Right. Our California blood's not ready for this cold weather.
I know. Someone cut us a little slack here. So let's get into tonight's game.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of those games. I'll just briefly say this before we get into the nitty gritty. It's one of those games that I think, looking back, it's not going to go down as a great performance by the Ducks in terms of overall play. But I think the impact that this game will have on the morale of this team. I mean, to kind of gut out a game where the Ducks were penalized constantly in much of a comedic fashion and were just able to survive this onslaught by a very potent, very talented offensively Dallas Stars team. I just think that has to have an effect in the room. And, we're not the type of show that's going to spend a whole ton of time talking about that stuff. But I feel like just, as a person observing other people, doing their work, I feel like you kind of have to feel that way a little bit.
Yeah, and it definitely kind of felt like, especially I know that having a fight or line brawl at the end isn't exactly what you want to see, but kind of being there, seeing kind of the team all come out afterwards and kind of engage with one another, kind of do their little stick salute that they've been doing this season and last season, it kind of almost felt like a moment.
You got the goosebumps. Just say it. You got the goosebumps.
Yeah, it kind of felt like a moment that could be like the galvanizing moment for this core and this group, if that makes any sense.
Well, I think it does make sense because you look back to, is it the anniversary of Bob Murray's famous interview with Craig Custance? Are we at the week mark?
Has it been a week? I don't know.
It might be slightly over a week, but last week the general manager of the Ducks, Bob Murray, made the comment that he wanted to see this team, A, play as a team, B, see the leader step up, C, see some consistency. And look, since those comments, I mean, I think the Ducks already had a win in the bag. Or actually, no, they didn't.
No,
the Ducks.
Those comments came out right after the Red Wings game, which they had lost. Or I think the comments were right before the Red Wings game, actually.
So there's a ton of irony there because, first off, so since those comments, the Ducks have won four games in a row, have, I don't want to say solidified their position in the Pacific Division standings, but have certainly given themselves a great shot, especially considering that two of their closest rivals, the Sharks and the Kings, have two games in hand. The Ducks currently sitting third in the Pacific Division with 73 points, 1 point back of the San Jose Sharks and 2 points ahead of the LA Kings, who are just sitting right outside of playoff positioning right now. So since those comments, a four-game winning streak, and ironically, this is what I was trying to get at, that Detroit Red Wings game, at the Little Caesars Arena, the Ducks had actually played a decent team game and were just kind of victimized, well, self-victimized by some very onerous turnovers, namely from Kevin Bieksa.
I forgot about that play right there. So thanks for bringing it back up.
And during that time, we had kind of been mentioning how, the Ducks had been playing a pretty strong team game since Christmas, since this lineup has been fully healthy. And you know, we kind of try to refute a little bit Bob Murray's claims because, you know, the numbers doesn't reflect it. And ironically, since that time, the Ducks mm-hmm. have been largely outshot in mm-hmm. these four games, have mm-hmm. not really played necessarily their best hockey, but their goaltenders are stopping everything and they're getting timely goals.
And the record shows that they've been good and they've won. So
exactly.
Yeah, it's just interesting that that's kind of how it plays out. I get where you're going at.
Hockey's a funny game like that.
Hockey
so just
is stupid.
Yes. Let's yes. Just be real. So in the four games in the four games of this winning streak, the Ducks have a minus 30 shot attempt differential at 5-on-5, and control 62% of the goals at 5-on-5. So, and they are a minus 13 in scoring chances. So this hasn't been the finest hour of 5-on-5 Ducks hockey, which is kind of funny because considering that, you know, with the reputation of Randy Carlyle, this team's has actually been, I feel like, outperforming that kind of negative connotation, you know, of a Randy Carlyle coach yeah. team. But yeah. anyway, so let's get into tonight's game. So before the game, Eric Stevens of the Orange County Register, beat writer for the Ducks, well, I guess it's not really his fault, but threw us a little bit of a head fake where it sounded yeah. as if Marcus Pettersson was going to step out of the lineup, and lo and behold, line rushes and warm-ups going into tonight, Marcus Pettersson remains in the lineup.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I think it was Pettersson's very first game. I think it would have been against the Blackhawks. I feel like Eric Stevens tweeted out something similar that he was like, Bojman and Bjax are off the ice early. Pettersson and Montour are kind of staying out there later. So it seems like those two are Bojman and Bjax are still in, and one of Montour or Pettersson will be out. And lo and behold, both those guys were in, and Kevin Bjax has sat for that game. So it's almost as if kind of the normal thought process of the guy that stays out late will be the guy that scratched isn't exactly applying to Pettersson. They just kind of, it almost seems like they want to keep him out there to be working on different things.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the explanation there might just be, like you're kind of saying here, that, you know, Pettersson is a young guy who wants to make that impression of, hey, I'm going to stay out there late, I'm going to put in the extra work. Whereas Francois Beauchemin and Kevin Bjax are both old and surely need the rest, the ice bath, the
sure.
whatever.
Let's go with that.
So the pairings going to tonight and would remain so throughout the game. Kemp Fowler back. They never broke up, but the pairings are Fowler with Montour. And I have to say that I'm going to assume, without having looked, that the numbers are not kind, reflecting kindly on this pairing tonight. But I thought this was one of their better games
yeah,
as a
I
tandem.
Do.
Lindholm back with his old buddy Francois Beauchemin, emphasis on old. I don't want to be mean, but come on, I had to make the joke. And then
it's the easy joke.
And then Marcus Pettersson back with Josh Manson. So the look that we've been seeing, you know, Beauchemin kind of taking that BX's spot. Interesting that although the numbers have not been glowing ever since the Ducks have. Ever since Marcus Pettersson has been in the lineup for the Ducks, they've been undefeated. So Marcus Pettersson does not have a loss in his NHL career. But the bigger story there is ever since the Ducks have not been trotting out both Bjax and Beauchemin, they haven't lost.
Shocker.
Now, I mean, shocker, but also, you know, like you hate to attribute, you know, like causality, but I yeah. think there has to be a bit of a correlation there. I mean, you yeah. know, Pettersson hasn't necessarily, I think he's looked very solid. I don't think yeah. he's, you know, like shot the lights out or anything. I mean, he also hasn't played very much. The Ducks have kind of been easing him in minutes wise. So, but I just think his effect on the lineup, and this is something we talked about, the trickle up, trickle down, whatever you want to call it, effect, it's pretty tangible with this team.
Yeah, definitely. And just some brief numbers on kind of that Fowler-Montour pairing, because I was curious. So when Fowler and Montour were on the ice together, it was 12 shot attempts for, 16 against, 8 scoring chances for, 9 against, 2 high danger chances for, 7 against. So high danger is not great, but in terms of pure scoring chances, they did a pretty good job tonight. And so with the amount of minutes that they got, because they had 16 minutes of 5-on-5 ice time with one another, which is a lot, especially when you consider how many penalties were taken in this game. I take that from them. I think that it, let me know if you agree with this. It feels like that pairing, now that they've kind of been given the chance to kind of learn one another and go with one another, that now that we have four games of it, it seems like they're starting to kind of adapt, and they're starting to play better with one another. And it was a bit of tire fire to begin with, but it seems like it's become a suitable pairing. Let's go with that.
I think that they're still very scrambly in their zone. Okay. I don't know if that's gonna like ever change. I just think these aren't two guys that have really kind of made their careers with their defensive play. But I will agree with you that I do sense a bit more comfort between those two, a bit more synergy. I feel like Brandon Montour has kind of been deferring a lot to Cam Fowler since he's been playing with him. And, you know, I think it's just out of respect. You know, Montour is his first full season in AHL. Cam Fowler is such a respected guy in that locker room, and he's known to skate the puck, and with good reason. He's one of the very best in the league at doing it, skating out of the zone. But tonight I noticed that Montour seemed a lot more comfortable just kind of taking it up himself, making plays, joining the rush. And, you know, if I'm Randy Carlisle, I think I'm encouraging him to do that, because you want Brandon Montour playing his game. You don't want him to just kind of be a bit of the nervous wreck we've seen in the last few games, where he's just chipping it off the boards, kind of fumbling with it, you know, just dishing it off to the next guy. I think that he's just got to be like, you know, I am an offensive player, and I'm going to go out there and play that way. And I think tonight, you know, the numbers aren't, they don't, I mean, I guess scoring chances kind of reflected, but I thought he just seemed a lot more confident with the puck, and, you know, allowing himself to be the player that I think he kind of truly is.
Yeah, I think that's probably pretty fair. Just kind of as a bit of a, not qualifier, but just as a bit of kind of a reference almost. Lindholm and Beaujolais on the night, 8 core, C4, 15 against, scoring chances, 2-4-4 against, 0 high danger for, 2 high danger against. So not too great from that pairing, but kind of a little bit more low event hockey.
Right. I mean, with that pairing, you know, Lindholm, Beauchemin, the hope is really just that they're not going to get destroyed.
Yeah.
You know, so if they're just barely getting by, you know, a little below even, I think the Ducks will live with that. Although it's not like, it's still not great, but I think you'd rather get bad numbers with Lindholm out there than with no Lindholm out there, if that makes sense. At least you have a chance.
Yep.
So let's get right into it. Right into it. I shouldn't say that when we've been talking for like 20 minutes already.
Yeah.
But let's finally get on with it, to this recap of the game, since it was a good game, and I think it's worth dipping into a little bit. So top of the broadcast, Brian Hayward mentions that, you know, although Ryan Kessler is still ailing physically, still recovering from that major procedure that he had last summer, he's still getting the tough matchups. He's still being looked to be that shutdown guy for Anaheim. And, you know, against the Dallas Stars, the obvious matchup for him was going to be, I guess tonight it was the line of Jamie Benn, Alexander Radulov, and Devin Shore. I guess Devin Shore was on that line. Mm-hmm. And Sagan was on the other line, the second line. Did not go so well for Kessler. I mean, you look at these numbers, 9 minutes total roughly against that line. And let's see here, against Jamie Benn, a -9 in shot attempts, 3 shot attempts, 4, 12 against. Against Radulov, -8, 2-4, 10 against, and kind of the same story with against Devin Shore, -3 in scoring chances. So rough night for Ryan Kessler. I mean, his sole duty is to, you know, defend the other team's top line and to limit them offensively. And I don't think you can really say that he accomplished that, looking at, you know, those numbers. That being said, though, I kind of wanted to throw this at you, Jake, when I heard, you know, Brian Hayward talking about this on the broadcast and also just looking at these numbers. But do you think this is the right way to go about it with Ryan Kessler? I mean,
no.
So why not? Shouldn't he just be working back to and being thrust back into the role that he's so accustomed to?
No, and I just don't think so. And I think I just don't think that's the best way to go about kind of working his way back in the lineup. If he's not fully healthy, which he clearly is not, all signs have indicated that. I mean, he's sat out a game due to injury. Different people from multiple different sources. You have Elliot Friedman saying other players can tell that he's hurt. You have kind of other places saying similar things. Why are you relying on this guy to have those tough matchups and shut them down? We talked about this when we talked about a bit of kind of Bob Murray's inconsistencies or inconsistent comments about the team. But if you're rolling out Ryan Kesler, who is very inconsistent in his play due to the fact that he's coming back from a very severe injury, and granted, that's not exactly making an excuse or anything like that, but it's kind of the truth. Why would you be giving him the toughest matchups? Why not try to put him in a spot where he can succeed the best? Why not utilize Ryan Getzlaff better? Ryan Getzlaff is used by Team Canada when he plays for Team Canada as the shutdown center. It's not as if Ryan Getzlaff is poor defensively. Babcock doesn't think that. Lots of different people think that he's fine defensively and can fill that role. And the Ducks pre-Ryan Kesler actually use Getzlaff in that role a lot. And it's interesting to me that they won't go back to that, and they're so set on these predefined roles, and it's not the best way to utilize this roster, I think, at this current moment in time.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Getzlaff's numbers tonight, and he was mainly matched up against the line of Tyler Seguin, Matthias Janmark, and Remy Elie. And what's interesting there, if you kind of really dive into the numbers, is that neither Getzlaff nor Kesler saw a ton of John Klingberg or Esa Lindell. And I'm wondering, is that a Carlisle move or is that a Ken Hitchcock move? Because I'm assuming with the last change, you know, you're probably trying to get your top guys away. Are they trying to get them away from Klingberg and Lindell, or is Hitchcock trying to keep Klingberg and Lindell away from those guys? I'm a little curious, because you look at the main guys that, for example, Getzlaff faced, Steven Johns and Mark Mathot and Greg Patterin. And those are kind of more like your, you know,
big body.
I mean, like, I don't think those guys are especially physical, but they definitely fit that profile a bit more.
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing is, I don't know if I've ever heard of Carlisle matching up his forward line against a specific D pair. He's very much the type of coach that will match up a forward line against another team's forward line to get that center on center matchup. But I don't know if I've ever heard of him specifically saying, all right, this D pair is out there, let me get Getzlaff out there. That almost kind of feels like more just kind of what happens, if that makes any sense. But kind of you saying that ended up being Mark Mathot and Steven Johns out there a lot about against Getzlaff, that almost feels like a Ken Hitchcock type thing of trying to get the bigger guys out there to match up against the Ryan Getzlaff and try to shut him down. And kind of transitioning a little bit, but they didn't really do a good job of it. The best line for the Ducks was easily the Getzlaff line tonight.
Oh, yeah. I mean, another great game for them. Another game where, you know, they looked potent offensively. Yeah. And I'd like to note that I think Corey Perry, once again, you know, it's been a bit of a stretch here where I think he just looks a lot more engaged. He looks a lot more aggressive with the puck. He's not shying away from just, all right, guys, like, Carter Kell, you're great. Ryan Getzlaff, you're great. But I'm Corey Perry. I'm just going to take this one and, like, charge the net. And so I think that's been pretty good to see.
I mean, you could almost say that hashtag Perry is still good.
I love it. I love our bits.
I found it was just too easy to work in there with the way you were saying it. You set me up so perfectly.
Hey, this is why we do what we do, because the hashtag chemistry. But I just want to briefly mention that Alexander Radulov looked fantastic tonight for the Stars. I mean, I don't think there's anything he won't try on the ice. Like, he just goes at guys. Like, he broke the blade of Hampus Lindholm's skate by driving wide, cutting inside, and just really attacking him and just shooting it right at his skate. I mean, and then on the previous or a couple shifts prior to that, he takes the puck with one hand and just bullies his way to the net. And Hampus Lindholm is riding his hip. And, you know, Hampus Lindholm is a strong guy. And Radulov just kind of ragdolled him. So anyway, if you couldn't tell, I really missed Radulov in Montreal.
Felix, I actually watched him a lot last year.
I mean, he's such a great player, and I love the way he plays because he's very skilled. He's almost like Crosby in that he's very skilled, but he's got like a grinder's mentality. But unlike Crosby, he plays with a ton of emotion. And I mean, when he scores big goals, like in the playoffs, it's just...
it's fun to watch.
getting sad. So let's move on here. Ducks go to the power play. Yeah. Oh, do we have a question?
No. I was going to say we probably should start talking about the goals.
Yes. So Ducks go to the power play early on. Interesting move. It's something that we've been noting on the show here the last couple of games. The Ducks start the first power play unit with Ryan Getzlaf, Adam Henrik, Corey Perry, and then Brandon Montour and Hampus Lindholm. And so that means no Rickard Rakell. That means no Jakob Silfverberg. So an interesting move. I mean, I got to say, I've been clamoring for Brandon Montour to be on the top unit all the year. Hampus Lindholm, I'm not so sure about. But what was interesting is that off of the faceoff, so as the Ducks were lining up for the faceoff, Brandon Montour actually lined up on his off wing. So I don't know if that's him just rushing, like, you know, as he's making his way on, that's just rushing to the left side before anyone catches him, before Randy Carlyle tells him, hey, get back on the other side.
This is where I want to be. This is where I want to be, coach.
Yeah, because he did end back up on the right side. So I don't know if, like, Steve Konowalczyk or something yelled at him on the bench. But I mean, Brandon Montour definitely made a case for why he should be on that side, because Ryan Getzlaf wins the faceoff, wins it back to Brandon Montour, who then kind of floats back out to the point a little bit, dishes it back to Ryan Getzlaf, gets it on net, and the rebound pops back out to a Hampus Lindholm sneaking in backdoor. Nobody catches Lindholm until it's too late. Lindholm pots the rebound, and that makes it 1-0 Ducks.
Yep, and I made the comment on Twitter, and it's one of those things where Getzlaf is very, very good on that half wall, and that's the only reason why I'm kind of comfortable with him being there as compared to a Brandon Montour. But when Getzlaf is really dangerous on that half wall is when he's able to pull the puck off it and really get a really good wrist shot on net. And he did that there, and it created a rebound, and Lindholm had an empty net to put the puck into. So really good things when Getzlaf shoots the puck, so it's nice to see.
Yeah, I mean, what's interesting there is that the Ducks they mess around with their power play a lot, like, if you really think about it. And Ryan Getzlaf has kind of been used everywhere on the ice on the power play. I mean, he's never down low, but they've used him now on the left side. They've used him, you know, as the point man at the very top. He hangs out on the right side sometimes. So I don't know if it's them kind of doing that on purpose or if he's kind of calling an audible during the power play.
It's just Getzlaf does what Getzlaf wants.
I mean, he really does as he pleases. It's no secret. So to kind of round out the first period here, I mean, the last notable thing that really happened, I don't want to sound like I'm bashing these guys, but Francois Beauchemin and Brandon Montour get caught out there, and Beauchemin makes a very routine pass to Brandon Montour to break the puck out. And then for whatever reason, Brandon Montour decides it's a good idea to, you know what, I'm going to give it back to Beauchemin because, you know, it's not like there's a forechecker that's about to be right on him. And so that causes a turnover. The Ducks manage to not get scored on there as it's right in front of their net. And then almost immediately after, Beauchemin has a chance to either clear the puck out or, you know, just like pass it to someone on his own team. Instead gets the puck behind his own net and just kind of flicks it in front and causes another turnover to the Dallas Stars, and it just causes all sorts of confusion in the Duck zone, and it just goes to show, like, those two just cannot be out there together ever again.
Yep, I am so happy we don't have that pairing anymore.
Yeah. To the second period we go, I noticed a lot of solid transition play from Brandon Montour and Cam Fowler, and this is something that we've already touched on, so I'm not going to go too deep into it, but I just think Montour looks really comfortable taking the puck up. We'll see if that continues. You know, obviously, different forechecking schemes, different responses from the defenseman. Corey Perry gets a beautiful, beautiful chance. I mean, I believe it's Ryan Getzlaf who pressures a Dallas Stars defenseman, clears it out to the blue line. Josh Manson gets a piece of it, is able to corral it, and then immediately wires it back to Corey Perry, who comes in all alone on Ben Bishop and just can't elevate the puck. And at that point, it remains 1-0 Ducks.
Mm. Yep. Yeah, I mean, great scoring chance from Perry. Ben Bishop's still a really good goalie. You're not going to be able to beat him every single time. But
really? I thought you said he wasn't good. Or was that someone else?
I mean, I don't think he's great, but I don't think he's terrible. I think he's mediocre.
Oh, no. I was talking to a friend this weekend who just said he's terrible. But
I don't think he's terrible. I just don't think he's that great. I think he's average. He's exactly an average goalie. He's going to have his good games. He's going to have his bad games. The thing that he has going for him is he's 6'7".
Yeah, and he can, like, supposedly play the puck really well, although I'm not really a buyer on that narrative. So a couple notes here to round out the second period. I thought that Cogliano, once again, kind of cutting to the middle as he did against Vegas. Nice little spin to the middle. You know, fires a shot for Kessler to tip, and Kessler just can't get his stick on it. And this is kind of something that I've noticed with Ryan Kessler. I don't know if it's just me, and I don't know if I'm just reading too much into this, but it feels like he doesn't really look comfortable with the puck on his stick out there. Like, I've noticed a couple times he's had, and I think this happened against Vegas as well, happened tonight also, but he enters the zone with control of the puck, has like a pretty routine backhand pass to make to his winger, and just kind of flubs it, isn't able to get it over the guy's stick. And I mean, that's a pass I've seen him and like most NHL guys make a million times, and it just seems like he's kind of fighting it a little bit out there right now.
Yeah, it definitely kind of appears that way. It's just nothing seems like it's coming easy to him right now. It seems like everything is much more difficult than it should be, and I think that's kind of an issue. And I think maybe we're overanalyzing it. Maybe that's the way he's always been.
I mean, that's the thing, is that you're always going to reverse analyze if you know the guy's injured. Like, that's kind of the issue with it. But, you know, what can you do?
He's always been a guy that's never been the most fluid puck handler in the entire world. Like, he gets the job done, but it's
he's not terrible either. Like, that's
the thing. No. But that's my point, is that it may just be something where we're really looking into it, and maybe it's just that's how it always has been, and we're just kind of really diving into it right now because he is hurt.
Yeah, and I'm glad you kind of said it that way, because there is a bit of a danger in kind of attributing everything to a guy's injury.
Yeah.
I think if you look at Corey Perry and kind of the narrative that swirled around him in the last, I don't know, like 2 years, and, you know, it's like there's the people who will say, oh, he looks terrible. There's the people who will say, oh, well, it's because he's injured. And then, of course, there's like the stock response of, well, it's something in between. We don't know at all most of the time, so... Anyway,
I would like to say I was in none of those boats. I was in the hashtag Perry is still good boat the entire time. So come at me.
I was in that camp pretty firmly as well in 16-17. I mean, yeah. I just, if you looked at his numbers, like he shot the same amount of pucks, and
expected goal totals were fine. I think not trying to sidetrack too much here, but I just think a big part of this year has been Getzlaf was out for a lot of the season, and he had Derek Grant as his center.
Yeah, so. I mean, you're not really, I mean, you know, no disrespect to Derek Grant, but you're not, Corey Perry is not going to shine as much with Derek Grant as a center. As he is a multiple-time All-Star Olympian, Ryan Getzlaf. It's just kind of the way that's going to work.
Wait, Derek Grant's not an Olympian or an All-Star?
Well, it depends who you ask. Depends which corner of Ducks Twitter you go to.
Good point. I mean, Ducks staff writer Adam Hutchinson still thinks he's the elite first line center.
Yeah, exactly. Shout out to Adam, by the way, fellow Canadian, joining me in mourning tonight.
Oh yeah, we should probably touch on that really quickly. I believe that we will win. I believe that we will win.
See, do you really want to use the soccer chant?
Hey, I'm just going to take it.
A program of failure that is USA Soccer.
I mean, when's the last time Canadian soccer did anything?
Who cares? Let's talk about you guys. look, I don't know. So by the way, for those who aren't in on the joke, we are talking about the epic clash between USA and Canada tonight in Olympic women's hockey. And just one of those games that really sometimes, because, you know, we watch a ton of games, we dissect them to death. And just one of those games that you can truly just watch as a fan. It kind of rekindles that flame a little bit. It's like, all right, this is why I do what I do. Because the game can just be so great when it's filled with emotion and it's filled with, you know, just every play. I mean, I swear, every time Canada was able to poke check the puck away from their own net or just chip it off the glass, it was just, you know, I was going wild.
Over time, my heart was racing. I mean, in our Slack chat, you definitely got into it by saying, Corsi gods be damned. There's something along those lines.
I kind of saw my way out of the chat once things got a little heated. I couldn't divide my attention any further. It was an epic game.
It was so good.
Honestly, like, I'm really disappointed by the result, obviously, and I think that both sides got really wronged by the officials. I thought the officiating was laughably bad for a gold medal game. And I understand that in the Olympics, it has to be two referees that are from, you know, neutral countries or countries that are not either of the teams.
But it was Sweden and what was the other country?
Like, I don't know. But like the point is,
fair enough.
Give the gold medal game referees. I understand the neutrality thing, but I don't even know anything about these refs, but I can reasonably assume that they probably haven't officiated games of this caliber too often. You know, you want experience matters so much, and you know, being accustomed to a pace of play, you know, matters so much. And obviously, like, this is the pinnacle of women's hockey, but they missed just some brutal calls.
But,
and I mean, notably the one on I'm forgetting her name right now, USA.
Oh, I was gonna say the one on Marie-Philippe Poulin for leveling Brianna Decker.
Yeah, that was, I mean, even in men's hockey, that's not allowed,
that's
in women's hockey.
That's a five-minute major in men's hockey.
And then, you know, the slashing, they were forced to call one in overtime. But anyway, I don't want to make this about the refs. Great game from both sides.
Let me ask you this real quick then on that game. So you and I have made it clear that we're both fans of shootouts. We're not exactly fans of them being the deciding factor in a game, or I think the better way to put it is having them be on the same par as a regulation win in terms of points. How do you feel about a shootout ending or deciding a gold medal?
Oh, man. I mean, it's great as a fan to watch.
Yeah.
If I was a player.
Oh, it's great television.
Yeah. Oh, it's fantastic theater. And I mean, my only issue, honestly, is the Olympic rules. I just think they're so bizarre. It's not really an issue. I guess it's just I'm so used to the NHL shootout rules. But and it is great theater. I mean, you think back to Sochi with TJ Oshie taking, like, you know, whatever it was, shots in a row.
Yeah.
I just, like, can someone tell NBCSN that if we could have, like, the layout of the shootout actually show us how many shooters go per side instead of just updating it every round? Like, I don't know what that was about.
Well, I think in the very...
Did you catch that?
In the very beginning, they did say that five shooters go.
Yeah, but, like, come on, guys. Like, can we get shots on goal? Like, can we do that?
That's true. I do like the five-shooter format as compared to the three-shooter.
Yeah, I think five shooters makes way more sense, especially for that type of game. Yeah. But anyway.
For those that missed it, Jocelyn Lamoureux won the game in the won the gold medal in the shootout, got past the five rounds, got to the sixth round. She made an insane move. Then who is it that came down for Canada? I can't remember.
I think it was Augusta. I think it might have been her again.
Augusta going again, and Maddie Rooney made the stop. USA won gold for the first time since 1998, and it is actually on the anniversary of the Miracle on Ice game.
Oh God! All right, so, let's move on.
One other similarity is that win was the last time a team had the chance to win five straight gold medals, before tonight when Canada had the chance to win five straight gold medals. So
it's just not meant to be.
USA just stepping up big when they need to.
I mean, I think honestly, like USA was they had to be favored for this game. I mean, they pretty much outplayed Canada the first time they played, and tonight.
Yeah.
They were the aggressors for most of the night. I mean, Canada's so skilled that you give them an inch and they're going to take it. But it was pretty obvious that USA was driving play and that, you know, Canada was fighting an uphill battle all night long. And if not for the heroics of Shannon Sabatos, I mean, it's potentially a regulation win for the USA.
Christian Wiebe's asking if this is now an Olympic pod. I think we are an Olympic pod now.
Well, look, people, it's the Olympics. Yeah. Come on, every four years.
It's the gold medal game.
Give us a break.
It's the gold medal game. This, at least just in my opinion, especially for the women's game, it's such an important moment because these ladies don't get this platform that often. And so for them to put on a show like they have, it was really good to see.
Yes, but let's get back to the Anaheim Ducks here. Congratulations to both sides. Congratulations to the United States and their gold medal.
Awesome tournament.
And look, silver medal at the Olympic Games is nothing to be ashamed of, even though it sucks in hockey. You have to lose to get it. But I think that when they look back, you know, years from now, Canada will be proud of this performance as well.
Yep.
To the third period we go. Andrew Cogliano drop pass, turnover. Alexander Radulov, forehand, backhand on the breakaway. Ryan Miller with a stellar glove save, slashing penalty on the play. And ensuing power play, Ryan Miller makes a beautiful save on Tyler Seguin in the slot. And then just about like a 5-minute stretch, I would say.
Yeah.
In that period of just insanity.
Yep.
I think, and it sucks because I was watching both games at the same time. So I was kind of, my attention was a little divided, but two consecutive delay of game penalties on the Anaheim Ducks. And there was already a minor penalty. They were already at 5-on-3. Ryan Getzlaff gets the first delay of game. And then Josh Manson gets like a delay of game.
5 seconds later.
And it was a freak delay of game because he's just in his own zone trying to rim it out. And it just goes over the glass. I tweeted out that the Ducks should consider getting higher glass at the Honda Center. Although I don't think they're allowed to do that. But yeah, just a bizarre sequence, and a sequence that would define the game, because Ryan Miller absolutely stood on his head. I mean, you really have to be frustrated if you're the Dallas Stars tonight, because it's not like they were. Like, you know, people were saying, oh, heroic penalty kill by the Ducks. And certainly, you know, they didn't get scored on and they held their ground. But the Stars were getting chances, and they were getting great chances.
Ryan Miller stood tall.
Ryan Miller was just not having any of it. I mean, he stopped 41 shots tonight on 41 attempts for the Dallas Stars. So it's really tonight, more than any other game that we've seen in the past, you know, on this winning streak, is a testament to just how great Ryan Miller has been this season. And so I think, once Ryan Getzlaff gets out of the box, takes a page out of Adam Henrique's playbook, or maybe he taught Adam Henrique that the first time he did it, but he gets the puck at center ice, does the old alley-oop play, kind of a high lob into the offensive zone. It becomes a one-on-one race between him and Ben Bishop, because the puck kind of lands flat in a bit of a neutral area between him and Ben Bishop. And Ben Bishop, you know, a guy who's kind of been fighting it lately. I mean, you know, famously, or I guess infamously, allowed 4 goals on 5 shots against the San Jose Sharks earlier this past weekend. And he's kind of looks uncertain, not sure if he's going to come out, not sure if he's going to do it, whatever. And ultimately decides to come out, but not really with the most conviction. Ryan Getzlaff pokes the puck away from him, and Bishop just goes swimming out of his net. Getzlaff slams the brakes and just fires it into an empty net. And according to your firsthand reporting, the roof damn near blew off at the Honda Center.
Yep, there was an audible pop in that building when Getzlaff scored that goal. It was the loudest I think I've heard that building for a regular season goal in a long, long time. And, oh, it was fun. And it just kind of brought all the energy into the building. And kind of, it's weird because a lot of times you look at a penalty kill and usually it's a negative thing because your team's going down. There are times when your team can build momentum off of it, and this really felt like one of those where the Ducks were able to kind of build, and kind of the energy in the building kind of added to that, and it was growing, and people were cheering when they were clearing the puck on the 5-on-3, and it was just kind of all building to that moment of Getzlaff scoring, and then once he scored, it's just celebration. And so it was a really, really fun and cool moment. And kind of tracking back a bit to the 5-on-3, did you notice what defense pairs were out? What defense pair was out there for the entire 5-on-3?
Oh, geez. Tell me. I don't remember right now.
Lindholm and Bojmé for the entire time.
Oh.
Well, because Fowler and Manson were in the box.
Yeah, that's right. That's
so
right.
They didn't trust putting Montour and Pettersson out there, because the reason why I noticed it was I saw they started and it made sense. And I think Ryan Miller, at a certain point, maybe a minute into the 5-on-3, covers the puck. They changed the forwards out there. And also we should give credit to, I think it was Kessler and Grant were out there and they did a decent job. But I was like, oh, that's interesting. The D aren't changing. And I was like, oh, it's because Carlisle doesn't trust Pettersson or Montour out there on the 5-on-3.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's a terrible call. I think if you're the coach in that situation, you just don't really know what Pettersson can give you in that situation. Although the flip side of that,
Bojmé.
Well, not only that, but I mean, the flip side of it is, you know, the idea of calling him up was to find out what you have in him.
That's true.
And I think that putting him in that situation, although obviously there are points in the line and you need to win and this and that, it's a pretty great opportunity to find out what this guy's made of.
Well, and I think kind of that, not only you're finding out what he's made of, but the flip side and what they ended up doing was you're relying on a very old defenseman who doesn't have his legs anymore to be out there for 2 minutes killing a 5-on-3 penalty for two yeah. minutes straight.
And yeah, so, I mean, yeah, it's
they got away with it and it worked, but it's not exactly a good recipe for success.
Miller time. That's where the Miller time comes in.
Yep, reaching for that Miller High Life.
Yes, Miller Lite. Sure sign of a good time.
Not the Miller Lite. Not
a sponsor.
not the Miller Lite. He's not reaching for that.
So to kind of round this one out, the Stars pull their goalie, pull Ben Bishop with like over 3.5 minutes left in the game, which I love because to me it's like, why not? I mean,
yeah,
it's probably not getting any better for you anyway. Adam Henrique misses an open net. The Ducks eventually fight it off. I mean, Ryan Miller makes a few more saves. The buzzer sounds. Brawl breaks out after. Perry and Ben go at it, drop the gloves, although Corey Perry did not seem very interested in that fight. I mean, wasn't really throwing any punches, although his gloves did come off.
Getzlaf was trying to get in there also for part of it. He was trying to make his way into that fight.
Everyone was furious, and, you know, it broke up. And, I mean, look, I think that's a bit of frustration there on the part of the Dallas Stars, who mm-hmm. had every opportunity in the world to not only tie this game but win it. So a huge win for the Ducks, like we mentioned off the top. They are now third in the Pacific Division and heading into Monday's trade deadline, which is now only 3-4 days away.
It is Thursday now, technically, as we're recording this. So
it is now 12:28 a.m. on Thursday morning, Pacific yep. Standard Time. So the trade deadline is nearing. We are on the cusp of seeing, hopefully, a lot of action. And the Ducks have responded to their general manager's kind of challenge, which was, show me that you're a team that can play together. Show me that you're a team that can be consistent. And although I don't think it's, look, I mean, obviously it's not like he's only relying on this 4-game sample, but I think that it's a good it's a good sign for him, that I'm sure that he's taking into consideration everything else that's happened this season. But now the Ducks enter the trade deadline with perhaps a little more wind in their sails and maybe a little more confidence, a little more willingness to go out and make a move.
Yeah, and I've kind of been keeping a note of this or keeping track of this and mentioning it on the last couple pods, but now in the last 10, the Ducks are 6-3-1. And
which is what you've been saying all season.
They need to be in that 6-3-1 or 5-3-2 range, so 12 to 13 points out of every 10 games, and they'll be on a 97-point pace. And that's kind of exactly what they're doing, and that's what they've been doing ever since Christmas. So
yeah,
they've been consistent in that sense, but definitely the trade deadline on Monday is going to be an exciting time. And there are some big names being thrown about, not just for the Ducks, but just in general. And it could make for an exciting deadline. I know that we've kind of said that a bunch for the past couple of years, but it kind of feels like this year, a lot of trades are being held up and there may be actually a big deadline day, which would be fun.
Yeah. So I'm thinking that, let me see here. Let me look at the calendar. So the Ducks play again on Saturday against the Coyotes. That's at 5 p.m. in Arizona. And then they play again on Sunday night. Mm-hmm. They play at 5 p.m. So I think that Sunday's pod, I think we might go a little deeper into the trade deadline then, when we'll be closer to it, since it is going to be at noon on Monday. But we're gonna tease it a little bit here, since some news did come out today. By the way, just kind of a last note on the standings here. So the Ducks, although they've won 4 in a row, and that's great, it's the unfortunate side of it for them is that the Kings have won 3 games in a row and the Sharks have won 3 games in a row.
Yeah.
So no one's really giving up ground, at least the people that they're fighting with.
The only good thing is the Flames have hit a bit of a skid and the Ducks have finally been able to get a little bit of separation from them, which is a good thing.
Yeah. The interesting thing with kind of the way the standings look right now is, if you look at the goal differential, I mean, the Kings are a plus 25 and are sitting outside of a playoff spot. The Ducks are finally back over into the positive range with a plus 1, and then you have the Sharks with plus 15. So it's kind of interesting looking at that, you know, how these teams have gotten where they are.
So not sidetracking too much, but I did not realize St. Louis has been slumping as much as they had. The Ducks, as of right now, are sitting at 73 points, and the Blues are at 72 points. And the Blues have a game in hand, but The wild card, even if the Kings were to jump up and pass over the Ducks, the wild card is still in play for the Ducks also.
Yeah, and you're a Lanch.
They had a good ride.
Three points out. I mean, it's not
That's
over.
That's true.
And they haven't even hit the 60
McKinnon
game mark
is
yet.
Coming back for them.
Yeah. So, I mean, it sucks because like there's a lot of teams in this kind of mix that I kind of want to see do well, you know, for various reasons. Yeah. And it would be fun to see the Avalanche make it. But I'm always gonna ride for my guy Bruce Boudreau over there in Minnesota. Yeah. And maybe one of these years St. Louis will break through. So anyway,
also it's almost the trade deadline, and the Vancouver Canucks have more points than the Oilers.
The Vancouver Canucks are.
They have more points than the Edmonton Oilers.
They're lost.
They still have more points than the Connor McDavid led Edmonton Oilers.
I mean, they re-signed Eric Gudbranson to 4-year deal today.
Yes. No. Yeah. That was either today or yesterday, and that's one of those deals where it's weird because
it's completely bonkers.
A lot of the reasoning behind the deal is they're saying something along the lines of now that he has this stability, his play will get better. Now that he has the stability of a 4-year contract. I'd love to be given 4 years of stability through playing like crap and kind of people thinking that, oh, because...
And your team being bad?
Yeah. Now that he has
the stability... Your company being bad?
Yeah. I'd love for that.
Well, so the Canucks are a depressing topic.
Yeah.
So let's hit on this story really quickly, and then we'll get out of here since it is getting a little late, and we do have to pay the bills somehow, and we have to be up in the morning. But... So announced today by insider Travis Yost of TSN reporting that the Tampa Bay Lightning are aggressively pursuing a trade for Erik Karlsson, and that a stipulation of the Senators, something that we've kind of known, but that he is confirming, is that they're looking to also shed the salary of Bobby Ryan, that onerous deal of his. And on top of that, a potentially third team could be involved. Now, I'm not too familiar with three-team trades, but I will say that it sounds like, for a number of reasons, I think Tampa Bay is the favorite to land Erik Karlsson. I think they have the assets.
Yeah.
I think they have the cap space.
Yeah.
You know, the interdivisional tax is something people have brought up. I don't really buy that. I just think that's where the market is, and they're just going to have to go in that direction.
It's a thing, though. It is a thing.
But like when you're trading a guy of Erik Karlsson's ilk, you're trying to get the maximum.
Yeah, but we're also talking about Pierre Dorion here.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm not discounting it, but I just don't think it's weighing as heavily for a trade of this magnitude, especially just considering the fact that the Lightning just have the best assets to offer. I mean, that's kind of what it comes down to, is that they can offer you either one of the best up-and-coming forwards in the NHL in Brayden Point, or one of the best up-and-coming defensemen in the NHL in Mikhail Sergachev. And there's not too many teams that can formulate a package like that and also potentially take on some salary. So how does this matter for the Ducks? Well, there's the potential of maybe being a third party, although that feels a bit unlikely. So
yeah, I don't think that happens.
What we really want to get to is, and we poured over this in our Slack chat today, it's, you know, could the Ducks be a player for Erik Karlsson? Should they be a player for Erik Karlsson? And
I think it's
quite the topic.
Well, and I think there's kind of two different things that, at least just my personal opinion on this, that I want to get out there, is that I don't think this happens. I'm dreaming a bit. But I think if you look at the Ducks system, kind of what Ottawa would want, I think the Ducks actually do have some pieces that they could get a deal done to get Karlsson and Bobby Ryan. And I think that it would take something to make the salaries match, or not match, but make the salaries work on the Ducks' end. And kind of the way I've been thinking about it personally is that maybe you package a guy like Fowler and he becomes the cornerstone, because Ottawa is going to be looking for a guy to take up the mantle as being their number one defenseman. And they're going to want a guy who has the cost certainty. You know what his value is for the years forward, and you can kind of build around that. And he's also still young. And kind of Cam Fowler, for all of his different faults, he checks all of those boxes. And so I think if you build the deal around him and you include a Jakob Silverberg and a pick and a prospect, and then you are taking Bobby Ryan back in addition to being able to get Carlson, that's a fair amount of assets that Ottawa's getting if you're looking at Bobby Ryan coming here as them acquiring cap space. And so I just kind of took a look at the salaries to see how things would work out. And so if the Ducks were to make that deal with Ottawa retaining no money on Bobby Ryan, the Ducks would be slightly over the cap, but they do have the option to put Eaves on LTIR, which would make them cap compliant, or they could just have Ottawa retain a little bit. So I don't know if it happens, but I think that there is a reality. There is some sort of reality that we can live in where the Ducks could get this done.
Well, there's a host of questions to be answered before even considering what the package would be, which is like, why would the Ducks want Erik Karlsson?
Okay, fair enough.
Well, no, I'm not disputing it, but I'm just I'm building this up.
I know.
Which is sort of, I think the Ducks are pretty happy overall with their blue line. I think that they have their franchise cornerstones in Lindholm, Manson, and Cam Fowler. And so it's a question of, well, why would we give up assets to kind of, you know, potentially add to something that we kind of consider a strength already? I think that would be the big roadblock for this trade to happen.
Well, yeah.
But that being said, when another GM is crazy enough to think that he should part ways with one of the best defensemen in the NHL and he's willing to trade, you kind of have to at least entertain the thought. I think that's just part of your due diligence as a GM, is to say, well, look, a top five player in the league is available. You know, would this make sense for us? Because look, I know that, you know, giving up a guy like Cam Fowler may not sound great to some Ducks fans, or giving up, because, you know, obviously, if Anaheim is to formulate a package to get Erik Karlsson, it's got to include, there's got to be a lot of salary to move, because, you know, unlike some other teams in this scenario and other suitors, the Ducks aren't really chock full of cap space. And also, you're going to have to give up some blue chippers. You're going to have to give up, I think, a Sam probably goes. I think.
I don't know if I agree with that, honestly.
Oh, yeah. Oh, trust. Look, if you hear everything that's been coming out with this Tampa Bay situation, everything that's been coming out with the Erik Karlsson asking price, it just sounds like they want your best prospect, basically, and a top guy. It just sounds like that's what they want. And now that's not what they might get, but I feel like one of the Anaheim's kind of crown jewels is probably gone if they're to acquire. Because think about it, they're entering a rebuild, and Cam Fowler, although he's young, he's not prospect or kind of blue chipper young. He's entering his prime, or he's entering kind of the other half of his prime.
Let me bring this up. I agree that Steele goes the other way if it is, like, he's a big part of the package if it is just for Karlsson. When you throw Bobby Ryan into that mix, it changes the package completely. It 100% does, because you are then removing that. You are giving them their cap space back, basically. And that significantly brings down the value of that trade. Because that is the major asset in that deal, in my opinion. Maybe I'm a bit off base, and maybe other people refute that. But then what's
the alternative, though? If you're Anaheim, you're going to give them Cam Fowler, you know, B-level prospect, draft pick.
What do you mean?
I'm just saying, like, how far does that bring the price down where you don't have to give up something significant?
For
you know?
Me, realistically, I think, granted, this is with no, like, real, like, it's not as if I have inside knowledge, but in my opinion, I think in terms of value, contract, everything like that, if you were to do something like a Cam Fowler, Jakob Silverberg, first round pick, and then maybe like a Jakob Larsson.
Yeah, but the problem is that none of those guys outside of Larsson fit Ottawa's timeline. They're starting all the way over. They're starting from the bottom. I mean, you trade your the best player you've maybe had ever. I mean, you're setting yourself back a few years. They're not gonna smell the playoffs for a few years now.
They're not gonna want their team to be completely young, and Fowler gives them a guy that's young and can still be a veteran for them. Same thing with Silverberg. You look at team, I guarantee you they're probably looking at a team like Boston, who looked like they were dead to rights recently and have turned it around instantly. And granted, they have that elite level talent.
Yeah,
there,
but Boston has guys that Ottawa is dreaming of right now.
But kind of,
and they're going to trade Hoffman too. There's going to be nothing left in this roster.
And that's why I think you got to get a guy, got to get something back for the team. And that's why I think a Cam Fowler is a guy that you can build around. And kind of, I think the argument.
But will Cam Fowler be on the team that contends, like when you've built it back up?
Yes, and I think
probably not. Yeah, but then he'll be like 31, and he won't be good anymore.
He's 25.
Yeah, but he's going on 26 this year.
So realistically, how long do you think the rebuild will take?
Well, it's a very open question. Like, look at Buffalo, look at Arizona, look at Edmonton.
Yeah,
I mean, these things can go horribly wrong. And do you trust this front office to get it right?
And that's kind of where I think if we were talking about a different front office, maybe I would agree with you, but maybe I'm just not giving them the benefit of the doubt and think that they would pull off this type of move and see Cam Fowler as this young veteran guy. I'm trying to think like as in how Pierre Dorion would think. Maybe that's a dangerous thing.
And the other thing with Dorion is that he is originally a scout. And so I think that he definitely values, you know, having prospects, and I'm sure he's seen a ton of guys like Steele, Mahura, Jones, and especially Jones being so close, you know, over there in Ontario. And so I just think, you know, if I'm Pierre Dorion, like my issue with there from the Ottawa side is I understand the desire to shed Bobby Ryan's contract. I'm just not sure why you would have to include that in this deal. You know, like, because you're kind of hamstringing your price a little bit.
You know? And you 100% are. But I don't know if there's, maybe they've tried to get that deal out for a while now, and this is the only opportunity they see that they can do that. And maybe that's why.
I just think if you're Anaheim, you're going to have, and look, like, if you're Anaheim, look at it this way, too. If you're Anaheim, giving up a Steele or a Jones, like, that's not what you want, but you have Erik Karlsson then. Like, you've taken a massive leap forward. And, you know, like, the thing with Steele and Jones, as good as we think they are, they're still just prospects. They're still unknowns. And so all you're doing is trading the possibility that these guys pan out to Ottawa. Whereas with Erik Karlsson, you know that for the next 4 years, he's going to be one of the, like, seven best players in the NHL.
Here, the issue with Karlsson though is he's not under contract for more than next season.
And that would be, and that is actually reportedly what makes Tampa Bay, it both helps and hurts them, because Tampa Bay has been identified as one of the favorites to re-sign him. I could see Anaheim, you know, I think that give Erik Karlsson a couple years in Anaheim, and I could see him being a fan of the, because I mean, Anaheim and Tampa Bay are similar markets in that, you know, they're in, I guess, geographically, they're close to big cities, but they're also kind of a bit of a lower profile, and they're warmer weather.
Yep.
And they're not a Canadian, you know, fishbowl type market. So I think Anaheim, and, you know, and there's a bunch of Swedes on the Ducks, like, I could see him being amenable to signing Anaheim, but like, it's no sure thing. And that's also what kind of brings the price down, is the fact that, look, you're getting 2 years of the guy. You're not getting him on a long-term deal.
And I honestly don't know if the Ducks get him. If I'm looking at it as, this is a trade you make for Karlsson for this year and for next year. This is something you do because your cup window is now.
But that is where the Ducks are, presumably.
And that is why I'm thinking, you do that, and then you let him walk and use the cap space after that. And then that's your value out of it. But that's just my take on it. I know I'm dreaming a bit with it, but that's part of the fun of trade deadline.
Well, everyone might be dreaming. I mean, no one really knows what it's like, but it just seems like from kind of every every box checking perspective, I think Tampa Bay.
That's fair.
I think Tampa Bay ends up with him.
Yeah,
if they if they allow themselves to give up one of Point or Sergachev, I think the deal is done. I just want to see it happen so bad. I want to see Erik Karlsson passing the puck to Steven Stamkos in the power play.
It's so crazy that we're even having this conversation to me.
But I love it. Like,
no, I do too. I do too.
Yeah. No, but yeah, it is crazy. Yeah.
It's just like, if you were to ask me before the season, so Erik Karlsson will, or just tell me before the season, Erik Karlsson's going to be a bunch of trade rumors, and it's going to be said that he's probably going to be traded trade deadline, and kind of ask me if I believed it, I would have been like, hell no. And it's just, it makes the deadline so much fun. And
well, it makes it like the NBA where everyone gets traded all the time.
Let me ask you this, kind of transitioning slightly, but a name I included is Jakob Silfverberg. And I was asked today by a couple different people, do I see the Ducks re-signing Jakob Silfverberg and Adam Henrique? And I think your instant thought is yes, that the Ducks should. They're important to the team. But when you think about it, the team is high on Steele, Jones, and Terry. These are all guys that it seems like they want to be in their lineup next year or within 2 years. The issue is there's not that much space in the lineup. And so it's almost as if it's kind of set up for both Henrique and Silfverberg to kind of go once their contracts are over, if that makes sense. Like,
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I haven't really thought about this one enough to say, to give you like a nuanced response. But my kind of quick thing is that I still think that the Ducks see Silfverberg as a part of kind of their next couple years. And, you know, although I agree with you that rightfully so, they're high on kind of their higher end, you know, young guys, it's still no sure thing that those guys come into camp and earn a spot, because I think one of those guys ends up the AHL and, you know, B just earns that trust. And I think Silfverberg, although he's kind of struggling offensively, and that seems to be a thing that they hold against him for whatever reason, even though he's asked to play a completely different role, I still think that I would be surprised if they felt so comfortable, so confident in those younger guys to let a guy go like Silfverberg, who's just been so consistent for them over the past few years. But that being said, it's not. I could envision it. I could see that maybe it would have to be a deal, you know, at the draft or in the summer, because I don't see them trading him at the deadline, especially now with this 4-game winning streak and the fact that
I
the window
that.
And all that. Yeah, but it is something that, like, it wouldn't shock me if it happened. Put it that way.
It's just basically clearing out log jams for these guys to come up, because it's either if you're going to sign Self long term, then you got to trade one of those guys. I think that's kind of the way to look at it, because there's just not space for everyone in the lineup.
Yeah, but also maybe they're going to shed salary somewhere else. Like, there's also that. I don't know who would be, but it doesn't have to necessarily be a kind of, all right, we're getting forwards in, that means forwards have to come out or whatever.
Yeah.
All right, we got anything else here before we log off for the night? Yeah, it is almost 1 a.m. here on the West Coast. So with all that being said, that will do it for tonight's pod. Thank you to the people who were in the Mixler chat.
The
Night Owls. I mean, this is like our second late night Mixler chat. We've done a couple of these late night pods now.
Mixler at night.
Mixler at night, Ducks After Dark, whatever you want to call it.
Oh, there we go.
All right, guys. Well, thank you. That will do it for tonight's show. Check us out on the Apple Podcast app. Subscribe to the show. Leave a rating and review. Let us know your thoughts on the show. Give us some support. We really appreciate it. As always, soundcloud.com/ACpod. Get on there as well, even if you're on the Apple Podcast app, or if you're not on the Apple Podcast app, check us out on SoundCloud. Search Anaheim Calling in the mobile app, and you can subscribe to us there. We will pop right into your feed every time a new episode is posted. And then, of course, AnaheimCalling.com is what makes all this possible. That is where we are based out of. Check it out. It's a great place for Ducks content. It's really kind of a unique voice in the Ducks media universe. We provide more of an analytical perspective. There's kind of this weird reputation that, you know, the site bashes the team. I think that might be because, you know, perhaps other media outlets are just a bit less critical, a bit less analytical, whatever the case may be. You know, there's a place for every type of outlet. we choose to kind of go more in a deeper dive and
try to be a little unbiased.
I think people appreciate that. Yeah, I mean, I'm not even a Ducks fan. That's like what people always come back to. So there you go.
And we also try to be fun with my weekly rankings.
And which brings me to my next thing. So AnaheimCon.com, AnaheimCon on Twitter. Jake is on Twitter at ReindeerGaves91. He's got his weekly rankings. It's in the name every week. And they're a lot of fun. Every week he ranks the weekly performances from each part of the lineup using a different method of ranking. Some weeks it's Anaheim Kong staff writers. Some weeks it's what are the best, foods or fast food chains.
This week it was Marvel movies.
So they're a fun read. They're typically coming out Monday morning, so to kind of get you out of the Monday blues a little bit. Jake's rankings are there for to kind of carry you through that Monday. I'm on Twitter at Felix_Sicard. Writing a piece should be out Friday for a bit of a trade deadline preview. I mean, there's just so much buzz around this trade deadline. Have to get something out there. Think you're going to enjoy it. Just kind of setting the table for what should be an interesting build up and eventual trade deadline day. And let's see. Do I missing anything else? I think that's it. All right, so that'll do it, guys. We will be back, let's see here, Saturday evening, Ducks at Coyotes at 5 p.m. That will be in Arizona. We will be recording a podcast after that. And then Sunday night, we got a back-to-back, Ducks versus Oilers at Honda Center, 5 p.m. We will be recording after that. And we will be, I think that one might be a bit more trade deadline-oriented than Ducks versus Oilers, considering the Oilers are a tire fire.
Yeah, and we can talk about this later, but maybe we might do something on trade deadline day also.
Yeah, and trade deadline day, the Ducks don't actually play again until that Friday. The Ducks don't play until, they have their doubleheader next Saturday and Sunday, and then they don't play again until Friday against the Blue Jackets. So, yeah, we might sneak in a pod there maybe Tuesday, Wednesday, even Monday night to recap the trade deadline, because I am anticipating some activity from the Ducks. I don't know.
I agree.
It probably won't be Erik Karlsson, but I think they make a move. I don't know what it'll be, but I think there's some urgency there.
Yeah, Bob Murray is usually one of the more active GMs at the trade deadline. I expect something, even if it's minor. So
yeah, I think we'll see something. So that'll do it, guys. We are signing off for the night or for the morning, however you wish to look at it. I'm like losing my wits here, so I'm just
falling asleep at my keyboard.
All right, guys, we will talk to you Saturday night. See you then.
Bye.